You know, when it comes to sessions, though, a special session, it had been asked for almost all year, and then we got it towards the end of the year. What do you expect? What do you expect to see on the agenda?
Well, so this is lame duck, and I can tell you that generally nothing good comes out of lame duck. Obviously, we're past January 1 now, so only 60 votes are needed for legislation to pass in the House and 30 votes in the Senate. I'll be going back Friday through Tuesday on the House side, and then after Tuesday, of course, be going over to the Senate. But late the night before last, there were well over 100 bills released from the Rules Committee in the House, 117, I think. And when you have 117 bills released all at once, and you're going to be in a session that's crammed close together, generally the Speaker's plan is to wear everybody out. And then just about the time that it's close to midnight, you've been in session for 12 hours, and you're tired, then they bring on this really crappy stuff. And sometimes those get votes just because people want to leave, as sad as that is to say. So I can tell you nothing good can come out of this lame duck session.
I wonder very much if what we're seeing in the lame duck session is an attempt to consolidate additional votes for the Speaker, show his commitment to one or more issues, to bring in different caucuses to vote for him and to get the required votes to remain Speaker.
It could be. I mean, he's a very persuasive guy, and when people are face-to-face with him in the past, it's been difficult for them on the Democrat side to tell him no to anything. The difference, I think, this time is the number of indictments. People may have seen yesterday that someone else was indicted. His last name is Lewandowski, he's from the Chicago surrounding area, and it was for tax evasion. But it opens up a whole new stream of possible indictments. And once again, this is a close confidant of Speaker Madigan, and I think some things may start to unfold in that realm. I think I've told you before, I believe that in the end that Speaker Madigan will be indicted. I don't know if it's while he's still in the legislature or not. I do think that as more names pop up, his chances of being reelected Speaker are smaller and smaller. And this morning I read that Kathy Willis is actually going to be going before the Democrat Women's Caucus and interviewing with them. Although they're not going to endorse, it is significant that there's another name in consideration at this point.
You know, especially when you look at the context, the Special Investigative Committee ending with a sudden thud, being called a pony dog and pony show or political show by the very chairman of the committee itself.
Right, which is, I'm speechless, as you can tell, about him making that kind of a statement. If there was a dog and pony show, there's no one to blame but himself, because he's the chairman of that committee. Now, I have a great relationship with with Leader Welch, but honestly, from the very beginning, it's clear that he had no intention of actually investigating anything. When you have only one witness that comes in and you don't actually call any of the individuals in as witnesses, what kind of investigation is that? So, it was a dog and pony show, but I think the blame for that dog and pony show lands at the feet of the chairman of the committee.
You know, I was talking with Dr. Paul Jacobs, who'll be, of course, swearing on next week, as you alluded to, and taking the state representative seat as you move on to the Senate. And he was talking about, he'd been looking back, and he says, at one point, we voted for Speaker 76 times once, and I forgot when it was, been maybe the 90s or something like that. It's got to be longer than that, doesn't it? 76 times.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I didn't realize until he and I were talking more that, you know, with the upcoming vote, you vote until there's a winner.
Right, because the House can't conduct any business until a Speaker is elected. So often in campaigns, you'll hear someone say, well, your very first vote is for Speaker of the House. I think people are going to get to see that unfold right now. The other issue at hand is that the person who presides over the House until a Speaker is elected is the Secretary of State. And although I know he's very popular and liked by many, there is some question about whether or not Secretary of State White is physically able to conduct a long, drawn-out Speaker vote. I would tell you, because Tom, you know me well enough now to know, I like to be in a good fight, you know. So I'm a little bit bummed that I'm not going to be involved in this, in all of this House drama that's going to be going on. I think over in the Senate, there will be a very quiet inauguration. On the House side, there's going to be a lot of exciting drama going on, and it's very possible that we are going to be serving and our constituents are going to be living in a time when we see the end of the Mike Madigan regime.
You know, they've also talked about the possibility of tax increase in the lame duck session, and my first thought was, you know, was the head plant. I'm like, we're still raising taxes as we speak. January 1st, there were gas tax increases. Things are still going up, and well, we need to raise more. Well, we're not done with the last ones. They're still being implemented, 11 cents January 1.
Yeah, it's tied increases in the it's early morning, so I'm losing
it's
the
inflation bay, yeah, and cost of living, whatever,
basically,
yeah.
Basically tied to inflation. So yeah, that's going to be something that goes up maybe perpetually. Hopefully someday it'll go down because inflation goes down, but it doesn't happen very often. The conversation over the last couple of days, I personally think that the Democrat side of the aisle is protesting too much about the Republicans saying that they think that there'll be a tax increase vote during lame duck. And that is because remember that Speaker Madigan promised the Black Caucus, if he got their support, that he would, and I'm paraphrasing this a little bit, but he would basically usher in the tax increase that's needed. So he's made some promises. I don't know what promises he made to the Latino Caucus or to the Latinx Caucus, but certainly he made a promise to the Black Caucus. And that is significant as we go forward, since basically people are saying that it's ridiculous that there would be a tax increase. That's not ridiculous at all. The Speaker himself has made that promise. So I think we're going to see that. I think we're going to see some really ugly criminal justice reform bills. Remember that one of those is for no cash bond, and that might be very good when you have a court system that's as large as the Cook County court system. But for the court systems down here and in many of the central Illinois rural areas, they do not have the capacity or capability to go out and find someone when that individual does not show up for court. And there's no incentive for the person to show up for their court date if there's no cash bond. So I think that's something we need to watch carefully. I would also say keep an eye on what's going on in the Department of Corrections. I think that very falsely, there's an impression right now that there is a massive outbreak of COVID in Region 5 of the state. That's because there's over 180 inmates right now at Pinckneyville Correctional Center who've tested positive. That's not an outbreak there. It's just simply because the Department of Corrections has begun testing. So, we don't know if those are asymptomatic because no one's putting out a statement. But I do know that it's being used to hold Region 5 in Tier 3 of mitigation. So keep an eye on what's going on there. They're going to continue to say that they want to shut down institutions because of the lower population. But let's keep in mind that just less than 3 years ago, capacity at the Illinois Department of Corrections was 130%. And the whole reason for wanting to kick people out came before COVID. They wanted to reduce the prison population. So are we now saying that we're at the 25% reduction that was asked for, but now we're going to go ahead and jam those prisons full again by closing other institutions? So folks need to keep an eye on that.
Yeah, I've been watching those numbers from the prison. 93 this mm-hmm. and there, and I'm like, how does that affect the county? It cannot be good when you see this clumping like this. It's weird. Right. DMV reopening today, we were talking about it earlier, and I just saw somebody texting me a couple of moments ago on the American Monument text line saying the DMV parking lot in Carbondale is full, about 20 people outside in line this morning just after 8 o'clock. So the DMV opened, but this Department of Corrections thing is something that we do need to watch going forward and how it influences our numbers. Today, my understanding, press conference, Republicans concerned about remapping, redistricting.
Yeah, I'm concerned about it as well. As you know, the majority party in this case has the House, the Senate, and the governorship. So basically, they will be able to draw the map with zero input at all from the Republicans, which means, as they do the redrawing, remember 10 years ago, we saw Dave Luchtefeld drawn his house drawn out of his district by roughly two blocks. So We don't know what's going to happen with this as far as the congressional remapping goes. That's going to come up as well. We know we're going to lose at least one congressman, possibly two. And those never happen in the in the minority areas politically. So we're kind of watching to see what's going to happen with those seats. They are going to have to become geographically larger, and that's just simply because we've lost population. So folks, keep an eye on that. And I'm going to be watching it very closely. I love serving. I've loved serving the 115th district. I'm looking forward to serving the 58th Senate district. I hope to be around for some time, and we'll just have to watch and see how those unfold.
The governor told me point blank to my face that he supports the Fair Map Project.
Well, good for him for saying that. Let's see if that's actually what unfolds. He says that he will veto a map that's unfair, but as we know, everyone has their own version of what is fair. His version of fair taxing was the progressive income tax. I think he heard loud and clear that people think that's very unfair. So I'll give him the benefit of the doubt until he shows otherwise. So if he says he's going to veto an unfair map, I'll take him at his word, unless he shows otherwise.
You know, there has been quite a contentious relationship between you and the governor on the subject of the Illinois Department of Employment Security.
Yeah, and that continues. But, you know, I'm going to step away from IDES for just a second, and let's talk about the Department of Veteran Affairs.
Yes.
You know, I have the Anna Veterans Home is in this region. Patrick Windhorst and I both represent Anna, and as do Paul Schimpf and Dale Fowler. And we've had no update personally on anything that's going on in Veterans Affairs. And I would just like to say this in regard to IDES, Veterans Affairs, FOID card, and CCL. The governor is breaking his arm, patting himself on the back for expunging felonies of convicted criminals a year earlier than was expected. And we can't fix the freaking CCL and FOID card issues. We can't fix the issues at Veterans Affairs. And we're still going on with these problems at IDES. I wish he would take a little bit of time and have his people spend on FOID and CCL for one thing. That's a constitutional right. Not in opposition to expungement of criminal cases, but good grief, can we take care of the law-abiding citizens before we're taking care of the criminals?
Good question. And I'll tell you what, that comes back to your comments a couple of moments ago about no cash bail.
Exactly.
We do things. All right, just listen to what Terry just said and how many times you've heard law enforcement officials and state's attorneys on the air here on this radio station saying this is cause of what's good for Chicago on no cash bail is terrible for safety in downstate Illinois. And that's why we see the same people repeating the same crimes over and over and over again. So I was watching the Heron Street Crimes Facebook page, and one of the statements was, why do we keep seeing these same faces over and over again? And I think that hits to the heart of it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And to the point of the governor, right now, he seems to be confused about why he has minimal support in Southern Illinois. And yesterday, we heard that Andy Bernard is going to be leaving the Senate and going to work for the governor. I suspect personally that he'll be kind of the shadow chief of staff because Ann Caprera, I'm sure, is going to be moving over to take care of the governor's reelection. And part of Andy Bernard's job is going to be to try to fix things as far as the governor's reputation in Southern Illinois. But I would continue to invite the governor to come here. And
I think we just lost Terry. And it appears that we did just lose the state representative. Oh, there you are. You're back. I lost you there for a couple
months.
I don't
know what happened there. My point was the governor is basically going to be using Andy Bernard to try to heal some broken relationships in Southern Illinois. But honestly, the governor still has not come down here, had conversations with the elected legislators. He still has not held one town hall that allowed for people to come in and ask him questions. And now he stopped his daily press briefings. So, how do you fix things with Southern Illinoisans? Southern Illinoisans want to look you in the eye, ask you questions, and hear your answers. That's what he needs to do.
Before I let you go, is Illinois in a death spiral? Are people leaving to the extent, and it's because of management, right? Now, there's been some economic issues, closing down factories. People running for the borders, their brains have been taxed out. They're making a run for it. They're moving to Indiana. They're moving to Kentucky. They're moving to Missouri. Moving to Wisconsin. You know, and when you see us bleeding people like we're bleeding people, and the poverty and the shootings and the violence that goes on associated with decline, I can't help but wonder what we can do to stop it. What can we do? In your mind, a state representative, soon-to-be Senator Terry Bryant, what could be done to stop this?
Well, I think we have to have a different attitude towards business. We have to understand that business owners are not the enemy. You know, if you look at something as simple as Mary Lou's in Carbondale, you know, for 6 years now, I have worked diligently to restore SIUC to a powerhouse. But there seems to be a disconnect between the city of Carbondale leadership and the SIU leadership. Somehow they can't get on the same page. And I believe right now that SIU is actually trying to get on the same page. When you have to have a vital downtown Carbondale if you want to have students coming into SIUC. So when you pass ordinances and when you affect fines, like what we've seen with just using Mary Lou's as an example, you cannot bring economic development to the state or to the region. So I think maybe Carbondale lately has been a microcosm of what we've seen going on in the state of Illinois. They have to wake up and understand that people who own businesses are job creators. You want to fix poverty, put people to work. And you have to do that by making it business friendly. So I think, are we in a death spiral? I don't know if I'd call it a death spiral, but we've certainly been in a serious decline for a decade or more. And I'm hoping that the Illinois legislature wakes up, maybe to the same way that we're seeing some of the reasonable conservative Democrats in Congress start to wake up.
State Representative, soon-to-be Senator Terry Bryant. Terry, thanks for your time. I know I kept you longer than I said I would, but I appreciate every minute.
Always happy to talk to you, Tom, and I wish everyone a happy new year. And please feel free to call. The office in Murfreesboro is open again starting today, 684-1100, if you have anything you need to talk about.